I really love this the practicality of this conversation. I mean, this is not where we plan to take the conversation, but the practicality of understanding the platform and how you can create content. I think, though, social media comes back to, though, of going on to build relationships. Is it's a content starts a conversation, but these guys too that are crushing the platform are engaging in the comments. So when you start creating content on social media, you're just getting started, and I think that can't be emphasized enough, that the goal there is to start a relationship and then to build a relationship. And I think you can take a relationship from that digital engagement to the conversational relational engagement to really a face-to-face interaction and engagement. Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith. I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Runyon. Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Nils. How you doing?
I'm doing good. We are talking about something that you and I have talked about quite a bit offline as well, about the state of social media. And there are some interesting trends happening. There are a lot of opinions out there about people leaving social media, people being more engaged on social media than ever, people unhealthily engaged on social media. Nick, I'm curious what you're learning and seeing in the state of social media.
Yeah, I love research reports, and you know they're always good for a headline too, which is typically how they come across, I think, our desks. But I saw something interesting the other day, humans are really good at recognizing patterns. And so I think just as you're scrolling through like thousands of posts, consuming a lot of media like you and I do, yep. I think we're both kind of noticing something that's popping up. So the first was Pew Research released a report last week that said it's on teens, social media, and technology. And we both have Gen Z humans in our homes. Yes. You know, the big conversation in our house is like, can I play Fortnite? And I'm like, I don't know. What would Uncle Nils say? Uncle Nils would say, yes, let your kid do anything on digital.
Anything is a stretch, but I've got a 6-year-old and 8-year-old in our house, and we spend quite a bit of time in virtual reality. YouTube, you know, we actually, yesterday, my daughter, we're creating a YouTube channel for our daughter. We've struggled with that quite a bit. But she's 8, she recorded her first YouTube video, and Katie and I processed through, is this too much information? We had said yes. So we're talking Emory through what is too much to put on social media as an 8-year-old. But man, it is this crazy world of how much is too much for this upcoming generation, and what's really healthy, and what, at the end of the day too, what are they going to want?
So I think listeners, who've listened to us from time to time or for a while will probably put you and I on, we're on the same spectrum, but we're at different places. So I tend to be a little bit more conservative with kind of our kids' social footprint and stuff. Yeah. Although YouTube is something that we all enjoy. And also they'll use my Instagram account and we'll watch like videos on Instagram, like really short clips. Yeah. We talked about Vine a while back. Vine was awesome because it was like these short looping videos, and and most of them, the best ones, were just hilarious.
Yes.
And so that's, you know, it's very much consuming. But Pew came out with this report last week that said YouTube, Instagram, and Snapchat are the most popular online platforms among teens. And what I thought was really interesting is when I dig into this, 85% of teens surveyed say they use YouTube. That's the most online, that's the most of any online platform.
Wow.
So it's YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, then Facebook, then Twitter, in that order.
Yep.
But when they asked which one do you use most often, 32% said they used YouTube most often.
Yep.
The only platform that was greater was Snapchat at 35%. So you're only a few points off. This like clearly points to YouTube is a huge space among teens and Gen Z. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yes.
The next thing that came across my, you know, feed or whatever was a post by a 17-year-old published to Medium that said, I deleted all my social media accounts and why you should too. And you read this article and this teenager is saying, look, I'm just sick and tired of getting caught up in the image, in the, you know, if I'm not on social media, I feel like I don't exist. I don't get invited to parties and all this stuff. Yeah. But what happened when all of those accounts were deleted, it didn't matter anymore. And it's this whole article about like how free that felt.
Yes.
And I thought those things were really interesting. And for pastors or church leaders thinking about how do we communicate, especially with like our youth and our younger generation, you have to pay attention to these kind of trends. I think it's interesting what we're seeing right now.
Yes. I think as we think about younger people on social media, and you just think about the human development of kids, you know, and I'm seeing my 8-year-old starting to deal with peer pressure at school and starting to deal with just caring, you know, about, you know, I would say my kindergartner, she's friends with everybody. Their whole class is one big cluster of friends, and she maybe has one or two she's closest to. There's not a popularity contest yet. In second grade, there's a popularity contest. There are real pressures of who are you hanging out with, who are you sitting next to at lunch. And then you start mixing into that as you get into middle school, social media that you and I didn't deal with growing up, of how many followers did you have on Instagram? How many people hearted your Instagram post? How many subscribers do you have on your YouTube channel? It's a lot for teenagers and kids to deal with. I think in many ways, as much as I love social media, teenagers would be better to not have social media until they turn 18. You know, I mean, there are certain thresholds, but it is a reality of how they're learning to interact and engage and connect. There are healthy states of it, but it is complicated. It is complex. There's no easy answer. This isn't a black and white, teenagers shouldn't be on this, or young, you know, even younger than. What I'm finding though on YouTube, and YouTube gets mixed into the language of social media, but the social side of YouTube is a fraction of what YouTube is. I think when you hear the level of engagement on YouTube, it's essentially the shows that are being created on YouTube. It's a content, a place, I mean, it's a search engine, but it's really where I think, you know, kids are learning to watch television, and they're watching people play Fortnite. You know, they're watching people do certain things on, you know, basically reality shows. And I think where I see it getting really dangerous is the last 6 months, I have been a consumer of YouTube. I spent a whole night just studying Logan Paul. Like, why is he so popular? You know, or I'll watch a guy like PewDiePie. PewDiePie, I think, is the most, has the biggest following on YouTube. It's bizarre to me. I cannot understand, but I look at myself as a 15-year-old. Everything I did was bizarre as a 15-year-old to the 38-year-old me, you know? But the content that's being created is unbelievably creative on YouTube. And so now when I, you know, in the evenings, I probably have 30 minutes, 45 minutes of, I watch my favorite YouTubers and their show that they're creating on a daily basis, and curious what they're going to do, what they're going to say, where they're going with their show today. And I think that's the behavior that's being created. I feel like it's less about social though, when it comes to that generation engaging on YouTube, and it's more the content consuming behavior, because we had one place to consume content. Well, we had two places. We had the radio and we had the television. And those were our two places to get media. We didn't even have the internet growing up, where now they have their smartphone, they have the Apple TV, they have cable TV, they have, you know, unlimited, now even virtual reality. My kids spend 15 minutes a day probably with virtual reality headset on their head.
Yeah.
And so the way that they're consuming media, I feel like that's the bigger deal here, is how they're beginning to consume media. And then I think it's the types of media that then can come into their lives that's very significant.
Yeah. And so as makers and communicators, or if you're trying to get your message out there, you know, what are you seeing as you're kind of studying these things that are like the most impactful or the most effective way to communicate with teens in this environment? Because it's shifting, you know, and
yes,
I think we can clearly say it's not Facebook, which... Yes. you know, we've done some sessions, you know, in different situations where we talk about, you have to understand, where's your audience? What do they value? How do you line up your message with, you know, those values in order to communicate effectively? Yes. What's that look like for a Gen Z that's on YouTube and
spending their time there? And what I see right now from a ministry standpoint is most churches that are even touching YouTube are literally just taking their Sunday sermons and uploading them to YouTube.
Right.
And the reality is, your Sunday sermon is likely targeting, engaging a 45-year-old person who is not
who already has an affinity. Yeah, they already have an affinity to your church, and they want to consume. Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm glad you're putting your sermons on YouTube. But if I'm thinking through the generation we're talking about and how much they're engaged on YouTube, why didn't your kids pastor 50% of their job being creating content for YouTube? Or your youth pastor should basically, in my mind, go follow David Dobrik on YouTube and see the ridiculous stuff he's doing and clean it up a bit and have fun and add a faith element to it. But building relationships through that platform or creating engaging content through that platform, I think should be, in my mind, that should be almost 50% of a youth pastor's job today to engage their community with unique content through a platform like YouTube. I think there is so much opportunity there because you can see that engagement and behavior of, imagine if a teenager every day is connecting with their youth pastor because you put up a 5-minute vlog that's engaging them in some ways, and then you connect that to the face-to-face interactions you have on Sunday or on Wednesday. I think it only enhances that relationship.
I think there's a interesting like strategy here too, where if you capture that video, so the world has been, I was at Mobile World Congress. I mean, in Barcelona, it's this huge tech event that happens every year. It's in February. This is probably 8 years ago. Yeah. And the guy from the stage was with AT&T. He's like in charge of expanding AT&T's mobile network.
Yeah.
Now keep in mind, this is like 2010, 2011, somewhere in there.
Yep.
And he's like, video is driving mobile adoption globally.
Yes.
We've seen that for several years. Yep. Video is an interesting format because, I mean, you and I are recording video right now.
Yep.
We will post this video. We will rip out the audio. We'll upload that as a podcast.
Right.
You can cut out clips. You can cut out audio clips. You can put it into, you know, 60-second posts in Instagram.
Yep.
There's a lot of great things that if you just get into the habit of being a video content maker, like what you're saying, you can use that in so many different places, and there's a lot of time efficiencies that are gained there.
Yes.
I think about like our youth group experience. When I was a student in high school, I was invited into by our youth pastor, just say, he's like, hey, come help us do this.
Yeah.
And we would spend so much time creating like crazy games, ridiculous stuff. And it was all an avenue to help open the door to the gospel.
Yes.
And it was very, very effective. I'm sure many people that are listening have had the same kind of youth group experience.
Yep.
Take that and move that whole thing into kind of a production that is able to be watched by YouTube, and you expand your audience exponentially. I mean, and it's shareable content. So, you mean, talk about putting a tool in the hands of your youth group kids to reach their friends.
Yes.
You know, if you're creating some hilarious videos or whatever, those are going to get passed around.
Yes.
And hopefully you're going to see more kids coming into your youth group.
Yep. And that's when I look at these and really what's, I feel like this trend that's engaging that younger audience is the Vine audience, the Vine creators who have now moved to YouTube, like Logan Paul, like David Dobrik, that are doing basically like Chubby Bunny, you know, on YouTube now, of what we did in youth group days of like those ridiculous games. And it's kind of the, like the Young Life, you know, model of doing Young Life on the internet. And finding ways to engage this generation. And I think just preaching sermons on this platform, while you might reach a few people, you're not really going to build a community around that. And so, and then I think as you get into social media, then it becomes multi-channel of you're engaging them through that consistent content, but then you're building relationships on Instagram or you're connecting on those other platforms. And it's, it's not easy and it's a ton of work, but I think it's a different kind of ministry now that I think should be happening at every level. So I think if you're a senior adult minister, I think you should be on Facebook. Senior adults are engaged on Facebook. If you are a women's pastor, you know, you should probably be on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. And then if you're a youth pastor or even a children's pastor, you should be engaging on YouTube and Instagram. And I think there are these just opportunities now to engage in really incredibly healthy ways. But what I'm hearing, Nick, from even the stats is from a content standpoint, we've got to figure out YouTube. And YouTube has obviously matured beyond just the stupid cat videos. It is in very much, I think, a future of how we consume video content. And I think YouTube Live and YouTube, you know, just regular videos, it's the average video length I hear has changed from about 3 minutes to 7 minutes in the last couple of years. And so it's a massive, massive opportunity for churches and especially to reach that next generation.
I think it's a great opportunity. I think you and I are quick to come up with examples of people, like personalities that are doing it well, but I am hard pressed to think of like churches or youth pastors inside of a church or a youth group that's doing this really well, which means to me, there's a huge opportunity to be visible in that space. And just kind of a sidebar, it's not all about personal fame and visibility, but you have to have that visibility to gather that crowd, that audience together. And so just want to be clear on that. So I think some good tips there for people that are looking to, you know, use YouTube and connect with teens in this generation. I mean, that's where it's at. It's also hilarious to me because YouTube is old. Like, it's been around forever.
But
it's the resurgence of YouTube.
It is. It's well, and at the end of the day, YouTube has continued to reinvent itself. And so YouTube came around. You know, Gary Vee got famous on YouTube by doing a wine show on a daily basis. Early days of YouTube, YouTube was was basically just a website. And now it's an app, and now it's something that's watched a lot on televisions. YouTube TV is now is basically a cable provider. Yeah. YouTube is constantly adapting and adjusting. I've heard they shut down YouTube Red, which also speaks to that the fact that they're willing to try things and then change them. They're demonetizing channels. They're doing things that are upsetting to people, but I think they have a big picture in mind. And at the end of the day, I feel like where they're going. I feel like it's the future of TV as we know it historically, and in the day how we consume video content. Now, it's not replacing TV tomorrow, but it's a new behavior in the ways that people are engaging with the content. But it is such a fascinating phenomenon and really fast. Well, I will say the best channel out there that is doing this is Dude Perfect. You watch Dude Perfect at all?
I know some of those guys. So they are in North Dallas here, located in Frisco. And I watch them all the time. And my kids are into sports and stuff. There's a batting cage and like a baseball facility right across the street from the Dude Perfect. Like it's like a big warehouse where they film some of this stuff.
My kid's school was right next to it when we were in Dallas. So we'd pass it.
Dude Perfect is doing it so well that there are kids lined up outside the door. And they don't let anybody in. But there's kids that just show up there from all over the country.
Yes.
To just see those guys and say hi to Ty or whatever. They're doing a very good job.
Yes. And there it's very much, it's almost the ideal model. Now you're not going to have a budget and a warehouse and a lot of these things, but I think about like as a youth pastor, we typically had a youth room, whether just one dedicated like Sunday school room. Yeah. That room should not just be used for 1 hour a week in your church. That room should be a studio for 6 days a week and a Sunday school class for the other one. You can do so much with that. Dude Perfect though is such a great model of, they literally just do, I mean, how many stupid trick shot videos can you do? And every video gets more popular and more creative and more interesting.
Yeah.
It's such a great model. And I think the ministry mindset is often, well, what does that have to do with Jesus? And then they, what did Chubby Bunny ever have to do with Jesus? What did the messy, you know, eating Tootsie Rolls out of diapers game ever have to do with Jesus? It engaged a unique audience. And at the end of the day, you build a relationship through some of these ridiculous things. That's been a history of youth ministry done well. And I think YouTube can feel the same way, but don't just get on and preach Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Build a relationship, engage a community, engage an audience, and then share about Jesus.
Yep. Here's another thought on that. Here's what it has to do with Jesus is it's not the perception. Yes. So we're connecting, you know, through CV Outreach, we see about 1,800 people connect with pastors around the country every month.
Yes.
What we do is we kind of watch and see what people are talking about because it helps us learn and understand things. Yeah. Here's another trend I've recognized recently. There's been, a half dozen people in the last week that have said something like, I don't trust pastors and churches because they're always pitching something. They always want money, or they're trying to push me to their bookstore or whatever. Now, you and I and people kind of in the church understand that those are resources, that they're consumed, and that tithing is a privilege, and it's, we understand all that.
Yes.
But I think the perception, what I'm trying to point out is that there's a perception that people have that isn't true, but by doing some of those other things and creating that audience and just like giving in terms of good, creative, valuable, consumable content,
yep.
It changes that whole conversation.
Yes.
So if the critique is, oh, you just want my money, which is unfair and not true, and I get that.
Yep.
But if that's the critique, this kind of changes the conversation without even really addressing that as a concern. It just takes a person, shifts them over into this other lane where it's like, you know what? I like these guys. They're relatable. Their video content is good. It looks good. So if that youth room becomes a studio, spend a little bit of money for $60 on Amazon. You can get really good like LED lighting.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Spend $60 and get some good lights. Make your iPhone video look halfway decent, you know?
Yes. Yes.
That's, I think giving back in terms of consumable content is something that even I don't often think about.
Yep.
But if people are spending their time on YouTube, YouTube needs content. People are going to watch stuff that they like, so make it likable.
I love that. I love that. It doesn't have to be rocket science, but I really love this the practicality of this conversation. I mean, this is not where we plan to take the conversation, but the practicality of understanding the platform and how you can create content. I think though, social media comes back to though of going on to build relationships. Is it's a content starts a conversation, but these guys too that are crushing the platform are engaging in the comments. So when you start creating content on social media, you're just getting started, and I think that can't be emphasized enough that the goal there is to start a relationship and then to build a relationship. And I think you can take a relationship from that digital engagement to the conversational relational engagement to really a face-to-face interaction and engagement. And so there's just so many possibilities, and YouTube is such a massive platform. This doesn't need one youth group to jump in and own YouTube. This needs about 5,000 youth groups to jump in and engage this platform. And you're going to engage locally, and you're going to engage beyond your local community. But and it doesn't need to just even be youth groups. I think we need content from your sermon on Sunday and from your worship team. But I think to your point, Nick, earlier from the stats you shared is, as we talk about the next generation that's coming up and where they're engaged and connected, YouTube has got to be a priority for our churches. It's got to be a priority for our children's pastors and for our youth pastors. And our senior pastors need to understand the value that's there. It's not, I still remember fighting the fights of why are you playing these ridiculous games with our executive pastor when I was a middle school pastor. And I think the executive pastors and senior pastors need to understand the value that is your youth pastor spending 20 hours a week creating content for YouTube. it's an investment. It's not just because your youth pastor wants to get internet famous. It's because your youth pastor understands how to effectively engage that generation. And so there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to put, so I already posted to our social media page, the article that I mentioned about the 17-year-old deleting all the accounts. We'll also post this Pew research article to the Facebook page and put it in the show notes.
Yes.
Unfortunately, if you're a youth pastor listening to this podcast and you want to share what Nils just said with your executive pastor, they're going to have to listen all the way to the end to get to that point. but this article also says, you know, the majority of teens are spending near constant waking hours on online platforms, the majority of which is YouTube.
Wow.
And so 20 hours a week creating content that can be multi-purpose, used as basically your whole marketing strategy for your youth group and for your church and to reach the teens in your community. But also it can be repurposed in youth group. I mean, I remember in my youth group experience, we had a significant portion of, you know, that Sunday night was watching video announcements or doing announcements or things like that. You can run the videos from your own channel to the whole of your youth group, you know, that type of thing. But I don't think 20 hours is unrealistic. I mean, is what, I guess the point I'm getting to, I don't know if you thought about that intentionally or if it just rolled out of your mouth, but like if I'm spending half of my time thinking about how do I create valuable, engageable content to not only resource my current students, but attract new ones. I think that I would agree with you. That's a good use of time. I'm teasing that out because that is kind of a radical idea, what you just said. And I think it will be to certainly many senior pastors and executive pastors. If you are a senior pastor and executive pastor listening to this and you're nodding your head like, yes, this is what I've been saying. Good for you. And like, send us an email. I'd love to talk to you more about that.
Yeah. I would love to see too, job resumes, you know, or even a job description that a church puts out looking for youth pastor of YouTuber, you know, or not just video editor, but like YouTube experience of if you're doing that. I mean, I think too, if you watch, and a lot of these guys that are so good, that and I feel like I can't recommend them because a lot of their content is dirty. I don't know, terrible. Yeah. But it's, they're so creative. And as a youth pastor, I remember I had to learn. I was not naturally a gifted speaker, you know, but I had to speak every week and I had to develop that skill. I was not a good game leader. And actually you can recruit some volunteers just like your YouTube channel. But I think even as a youth pastor, you need to be that person that can learn to engage through this medium, that can learn to engage through a camera and make personal engagement through a camera. That is the world that we're living in from a ministry leadership perspective. And that's a skill that our leaders and our senior pastors and our youth pastors and our children's pastors, they need to learn how to engage through a camera. And that feels unnatural. And a lot of times it feels like it's about them. You know, and you're trying to become a TV preacher or whatever that perception might be. But I think it's a critical skill in engaging this next generation.
I think this conversation could go on and on. We've sitting here talking, I'm thinking of several other things like engage your students. But then what's that mean? Do I have to have like talent waivers and do I have to have parents sign off on because I'm publishing this stuff on the internet, you know?
Yes.
All sorts of things, maybe for another day. Just to wrap us up here, what are like your top three tips for somebody who's not doing this to really get started with like a church or a youth group YouTube channel? What are the biggest three things that they should think about?
I'm curious to you. Same thing for you, Nick. The question come back to you is first thing is spending at least an hour a day on YouTube. So consume, and pay attention to who you think you need to target as a ministry leader. Pay attention to who you think they might be paying attention to and follow those YouTube channels and see what they're doing. And so just as I started paying attention to Logan Paul and David Dobrik, and I actually started following Logan Paul, which led me to Jake Paul, which led me to you know, and Casey Neistat and David Dobrik. So follow that. Go down this path. Go to, let yourself go down a rabbit trail for at least a week to consume content, create content, kind of define that channel. You need to be creating. If you're going to create a YouTube channel, you need to be creating. Consistency is key, at least one video a week. So what is that one video a week? If you are a youth pastor, I think you should be targeting a video a day with one, with a Sabbath. And so one day a week, you don't post. Otherwise, you're posting one video a day. It might be a 2-minute video a day, but it's one video a day. But you need to target a minimum of one a week if you're going to start a YouTube channel. And then the third is, how are you going to build community? So you're not just creating content, you're building a community. Are you going to respond to comments? Are your volunteers going to do that? What is your path to engagement? What channels are you going to use? Are you going to use Instagram? Are you going to use email? Where are you going to move them from the content to community? What does that look like for you? Those are my 3 points. Nick, I'm curious your thoughts.
I think it's really good. My first one, I'll lead with this because I think it piggybacks on what you're saying. If you're going to watch what your students are watching, you know, and understand what they find interesting and what they're spending their time on, you have to translate that. The application then is what's going to be valuable content for, yes, for them. So my first tip is just kind of this whole idea of know your audience and give them valuable content.
Yep.
And if valuable content are fail videos, then let's do fail videos. And you don't even have to create your own. Here's a free idea. My top 5 fail videos of the week. I mean, that could be like your Wednesday post.
Genius.
And you, all you do is just go find what everybody else is doing and slice it together. So, and I guarantee you, I would watch that all day long.
All day.
Favorite Instagram account is Epic Daily Fails. I love it.
Kids getting hurt is my favorite Instagram channel, by the way.
That one's a good one.
Yes.
Tip number 2 would be production quality. And this, I think, is really down. You can go crazy on gear, but just spend a little bit of money on some decent lights.
Yes.
And you need at least 2 lights, different directions. Lots of good videos online about how to light a set and things like that. But just doesn't, I think for under $100, you can make your video look pro just by better lighting.
Yes. I didn't, to add to that, Nick, production quality, what I found in the last 6 months paying attention, production quality matters. In the past, quantity trumped quality.
Yeah.
I think it's shifting. I think quality is trumping quantity. And I think production quality really does matter in YouTube.
Yeah. My third thing would be, and for a number of reasons, involve your students. Yeah. Figure out what the challenges and barriers are to that and then solve them. But involve your students in some way, because I can say Phil Heller and Todd Bussey were my youth pastors in high school. And those guys changed my life by involving me in our youth group. And it's not just me. There's probably, I mean, a dozen guys that I can call up right now who are still active in their faith, have great ministries of their own. And they were all involved in youth group in like a real way. I mean, we were running the thing alongside with these pastors. So not only were they kind of teaching us in the faith, they were teaching us how to build your own ministry, how to share your own faith, how to, I remember Phil told me like everything in youth ministry is borrowed or stolen, because we would make t-shirts that were like blatantly using logos of real companies. And we would, you know, and they were hilarious. And he's like, that's no different than really marketing, you know? So I think maybe I can credit my youth pastor with putting me on this marketing path, but involve your students. I mean, I think that's going to be huge. And not only for their own benefit, for your own ministry to them, but it's going to teach them kind of skills that are going to be necessary for when they roll out of high school and they go to college and they get into real world experiences. So there's a lot of challenges with it. Figure out how to solve those problems to get them involved.
I love it. Great, great conversation, Nick. Thanks so much for your insights. Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of the Social Media Church podcast. Show notes available at socialmedia.church. And if you would, go to iTunes and leave a review or wherever it is that you're listening. Thanks for listening.